Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix. Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast. On the left.
Right from your glaze.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
Memento mori, baby. It's time to remember that you are gonna die.
Jeez, that's pretty intense, dude.
This is the most metal fucking ending of a series, dude. Fucking get into it, man.
Awesome. Welcome to the last podcast.
Dance macabre. Whoa. Have a bit of a trot with the skeleton baby. You'll be one of them soon, my friend.
I love Chunky Ozzy on the Oz Boys. Welcome to the last podcast. On the left, everyone, I am Ben, hanging out with Henry and, of course, Marcus Parks. Today's episode, this is the climax of a long, disgusting road of blood, guts, and pus. Yeah. We are on to part five of the Black Death.
Yes.
Please, Ben, do not forget the blood mixed with the vomit.
I actually want to publicly apologize for forgetting that. Thank you. I am sorry, Marcus, and I am sorry, Henry. The blood and the vomit mixed.
But I tell you what, man, this trip, this whole saga has taken me from Lutes to flutes. Now I'm listening to some bardcore. But last night I got deep into folk metal.
Oh my
god.
Yeah.
Skyclad. Have you ever listened to Skyclad?
I never have.
Fucking
but I did see some great folk metal. I saw a great folk metal concert at BB King's a few years ago. Can't remember a single fucking band that I saw, but they were amazing.
Wittershins Jig.
The Wittershins Jig.
If you want to go out there, like, I can't imagine better music to watch an entire village die to.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw some folk metal band open for Tear like many years ago, and it was fucking insanely fantastic. It was like it was a medieval like quartet standing next to like two Scandinavian metal guys that are just fucking shredding the whole time. Some girl that's singing in like the highest register
yes.
possible.
Yes,
it was
wow. great. I do love it. I will say I ordered several tunics. Because I wanted to do a bit of a medieval photo shoot
sure.
to promote, because, you know, people love my body.
Of course. Yeah.
And they're delayed. What the fuck is going on here?
Wow.
Another result of the current epidemic.
Wow, you are a victim. You're a victim in every way.
Yeah,
one
of these days, the jerkin industry will recover, Henry, and you'll be there right at the beginning.
It's been 800 years.
Okay, can we get to the Black Death part five, please?
So when we last left the Black Death, Yersinia pestis had entered England through port cities in the west, like Bristol and Weymouth, which was actually called Malcolm Regis in 1348.
Oh,
I was partly correct.
I mean, you know, I don't want to take anything from Weymouth.
Of course.
I don't anything because, you know, apparently they have a very nice amusement park.
Oh, nice.
And it's one of what one emailer said it was the nicer beaches in England if you could call what we call beaches nice.
Well, isn't that fantastic? And it's one of the nicer ones.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. And the plague had been carried to the island on ships that had been fighting the Hundred Years' War with France. Now, the plague certainly killed quite a few people in those cities and in various towns as it made its way east. But the English city that would bear the brunt of the plague, both in 1348 and in the last big outbreak of the second plague pandemic, was London.
Can we get a big bell sound here? Can we get a...
I think you just did it.
Hold the bell tolls.
Fucking
metal, dude.
Nice.
I also, one tidbit that I thought was interesting about the shit, all the booty. coming back from the Hundred Years' War, and how that also helped spread the plague.
So and what are we talking? You said shit and booty.
Shit and booty.
Okay.
Wait, they people going and getting like the prizes from war. Like people brought back all the spoils of war. People brought all back the fashions of France, because that was the height of medieval garb was in France at the time. And so people would go around in these unwashed Parisian dresses, fresh from dead raped women.
Oh,
they went all the way through France and stole all of this shit, and they're wearing it, and they are very proud to show off all of their new fashions.
Sure,
but they're covered in fleece. So they, because that's what happens when, oh, I guess fashion is pain.
Be careful when you shop at your Goodwill. Make sure you got to kind of spray some stuff off. Perhaps there's some bugs in there and whatnot. But why do they call it the spoils of war? Because it seems so fun and fresh, doesn't it? You would think when you hear spoils, you're like, they just brought home a bunch of rotten tomatoes or someone's grandmother.
Why is it called spoils?
I don't know. That's
actually a really good question.
Also sort of making a joke, also kind of just talking.
Gotcha. I don't fucking know.
There might not be an answer.
I'm sure it's some sort of arcane use of the word spoils, and probably our modern term spoiled spoils, probably comes from that spoils of war. I have no fucking clue. Now I'm just talking.
Now it's a good point, because if you're spoiled, maybe you had too much, and then you're spoiled, and you're spoiled rotten.
I want to start right now by saying, first of all dictionaries are made up. Words are made up. Letters aren't real.
But we still have to find a way. That's the only way we can communicate.
Nothing's real. There's no objective truth.
There is some.
Now, while we've gotten a bit of guff for really hammering home the squalor angle of 14th century Europe, there can be absolutely no arguments surrounding the amount of filth and feces that covered London for centuries.
And still.
Yeah. The principal sewage dumping ground in London was the Fleet River, where all the private outhouses emptied out. And it was sometimes filled with so many turds that ships couldn't pass through its waters.
Oh, my. I've seen a lot of turds in my day. I've never seen so many goddamn brown logs in my life.
Can you imagine the turd that sank the Shitanic?
Oh, man. Shitberg ahead.
But those are just the outhouses near the river. Oh. Other privies emptied their toilets into cesspools, and those became so full that one turd wrangler named Richard the Raker actually drowned in one after he accidentally fell in.
Oh no! I dropped my night guard in there.
Oh, no.
I better get down there. Oh, man. Oh, there's all these other night guards in here.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
You're going to want that night guard for later.
Do you remember when you dropped your, when we were on the road, Marcus, and we stopped at that Burger King and you had your Invisalign braces and you accidentally left it in the Burger King bag, and then you had to go through the trash dump to look for
But they were in the bag.
Yeah, they were in the bag.
And
yeah.
It was a fresh, it was right on top there.
Yeah, I was not in any way grossed out. It was you that I had to calm down.
I was very upset about it.
Well, it was weird seeing one of your best friends, you know, kind of just shuffling through the trash at a Burger King.
And then he pulls out the thing that's so intimately next to his gums, and then he just kind of patted it on his leg, and he's like, ah, it's fine. And,
and you know what, Henry? It was fine.
It was fine.
Nothing happened.
He's got an old West. He's got a whole Western bloodline in him.
Hindsight's 2021.
Now, London in 1348 was relatively small. When the streets were empty, it took only 20 minutes to walk the city from end to end. Mm. But during the daylight hours, that same small space was crammed with 60,000 people, along with an equal number of chickens, cows, dogs, cats, oxen, geese, and horses. And as John Kelly put it, all of this mayhem was all compressed into lanes barely wide enough for a fat man to turn around in.
And you know, fat men love to spin.
Well, they have to.
As far as where the action was, and therefore where the plague spread, you had places like the Shambles and Butcher's Row. And these two places together were essentially a shopping mall and a slaughterhouse right next to each other.
And both
were filled with toothless, stinking, screaming Londoners.
This is back when people were really people.
That's right. They were tough. I remember that. I like that. It sounds like a dangerous place to be a chicken, though, because they'll just grab you right off the street and cut your head off, and next thing you know, you're being fed to the masses.
Amen. Mm-hmm. Any chicken within 15 feet of me is in a dangerous place.
I agree with that.
I need some fucking chicken. I actually recently unearthed a plague sanitation station. I don't know if you saw that. They saw it is this stone. It's this little obelisk. And I guess it would start being proliferated throughout Europe where it would have vinegar in it, like a pile of vinegar in it to encourage people to sanitize their hands as they walked throughout their day, much like we got going on right now.
So everyone smelled like vinegar as well.
I mean, vinegar is better than liquid shit, is it?
Yeah, I love vinegar. If everyone smelled like vinegar, I'd be fine with it.
They also smell like liquid shit, though.
Yeah, vinegar mixed with liquid shit. Yeah, it's that thing of like if you mix 5 pounds of shit and 5 pounds of ice cream, you just get 10 pounds of shit.
I think about that every day, and they never make my order at Cold Stone. And I've said shit on that ice table, shit on the ice table, and they just refuse to do it.
You gotta go to France.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of toothless Londoners, back in the Middle Ages, people believed that toothaches, this is just a little aside, believed that toothaches were the result of tiny worms eating into your teeth, and the only fix was to burn a sweet-smelling candle in the person's mouth to draw the hungry worms out.
Hear me out, everyone. Toothbrush, hear me out. You guys think a toothbrush might work? I have a product here. It's worked on mine.
Toothbrushes are gay.
Oh my god.
But also because they thought that they thought worms resided in the body at all times, and that when we died, that the worms were then just released.
Oh, like the Edgy Boogeyman from Nightmare Before Christmas.
Man, we were really almost there. Like the 14th century is when humanity was just almost there on everything.
Yeah.
Now, apart from the shambles, you also had Cheapside, which is home to 4,000 individual market stalls, hundreds of musicians and beggars, countless rogues and scalawags, and 14th century celebrities like the great sea captain Sir Walter Manny and Canterbury Tales author Geoffrey Chaucer.
Oh, very nice. You mentioned how it was full of musicians and beggars as if they weren't the same. Person. I think it was beggars who were singing desperate for attention.
But if you got a song, you don't need money because you got rhythm in your pockets and you got drums in your pants.
Man, you're really figuring out how to be a producer.
But the busiest place in London behind Cheapside was the Thames Riverfront, where ships from every nation came every day to trade from the dock. But at night, that harbor became, in John Kelly's words, the kingdom of the rats.
The kingdom of the rats.
That's really cool. That's fun.
What a fun time to be a rat. It's not a fun time to be a rat. I guess they are in charge.
The rats are totally dominating.
Oh, also a bit of an update. And this is why we did a fifth episode. It was because there's another person implicated here.
What?
Apparently. Ooh, and honestly, this is kind of a shock to me because I don't like fucking with a hustler. I don't like fucking with a hustler's game. I don't want to fuck with somebody who's super, super busy. But apparently, it seems to be new evidence has come to light that 5,000 years ago, the first evidence of why pestis came from, a beaver.
A beaver?
A beaver.
Scientists have found the earliest known strain of plague in the remains of a 5,000-year-old hunter-gatherer. They think that he was bitten by a beaver.
By a beaver? Because
he's got the beaver mark. He's the mark of the beaver.
Be very careful. That body has the mark of a beaver.
Mark of the beaver.
Is there any evidence that it came? Do they know that why pestis is any sort of beaver? Do they just say a guy got bit by a beaver and they think that just because he got bit by a beaver, that's what gave him why pestis?
Let me throw science words at you.
Please.
All right.
An analysis of samples from the man's teeth and bones revealed that he was likely the only one among those buried with the disease. Researchers reconstructed the bacteria's genome using genome sequencing and believe the bacteria was likely part of a lineage that emerged roughly 7,000 years ago, which is... Oh, wait. I'm looking at this article, and I don't know how they know it was beaver fleas.
All right. Very good answer by Henry.
But they're saying it's a beaver. They're calling it the beaver, and I don't know why they're doing it, but honestly, now we have to, too.
Well, he had the mark of the beaver.
So as London slept each night, thousands of rats descended on the city from ships that came from all over Europe, bringing plague from the water as the Black Death marched from the west to bring Yersinia pestis by land.
This plague in the water. This plague in the water.
That's a great song.
DMB.
Now, when the plague first hit London in September of 1348, the country attempted to keep some semblance of normality. The royal courts didn't stop, and tax collectors kept collecting taxes.
Oh my God, that's so sweet how they kept the normality. Yeah. How they just taxes. Were like, yes, everyone's devastated, no one has any money, but we don't want to like mess up the we don't want to kerfluffle the flow.
Yeah, you don't want
tax man.
They actually had a stock market there where they sold stocks to put people in, and you don't want to affect that.
You don't want to affect that.
Well, at this point in time, remember that England is engaged in the Hundred Years' War with France. So there is a lot of money that has to go into whipping France's ass. At least, you know, and remember, this is 116-year war. So that's where the taxes are going. And that's why they have to keep fucking collecting money. Not have to, but that's why they are collecting money.
Yeah, that's and back then, they had a lot of money invested in drone warfare, which was just a man with a blindfold on being let in with, I guess, a bunch of plague rats.
I mean, I feel like you could have distracted a whole French military wing with just a couple of ducks and hats. They love such fun stuff.
They used to be very a very willing and intense adversary, the French.
Oh. Yeah, the French used to be the most feared adversary in all of Europe. They were number one for hundreds of years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Until a different group of people came around.
But that's you're talking about your people. You're talking about the fucking Germans. You're talking about what happened, what your lineage is all stamped with.
But that's the thing, is that King Edward, he was paying a lot more attention to his war with France than he was the plague. Because remember, like, King Edward had already lost his daughter, Princess Joan, to the plague in France before it had even reached England. So his reaction upon the plague's arrival in London was more apathetic than anything else. He just didn't fucking care. But as more and more people died, apathy turned to fear, and the beloved king fled to his palace in the countryside.
Several kings did live, but one thing I found interesting going through the great courses was how many ruling bodies died almost entirely from the plague. Every single one of these countries, I believe the Council of 12 was almost completely wiped out in Italy. I think what was called the Council of Seven in France. I'm not quite certain if that's the actual term. They're all fucking dead. They killed everybody on the up top too, which it would almost be nice to see senators that afraid. You know what I mean? Like, watch them all scurry and run. That would be really fun to see.
You can watch it. It just happened recently.
I know.
It's on YouTube. The New York Times did a great expose on the January 6th riot, as a matter of fact. Check that out if you want to go onto YouTube. But senators scared. It is something that happens.
It's nice.
Yeah. Now, unfortunately, we don't have as vivid of accounts of the 1348 London Plague as we do from, say, the plague in Florence, because London produced no great plague chroniclers.
What
we do have. Yeah, they just didn't. They're just nobody.
So strange to me.
Isn't it weird?
It ripped through the writing class. It ripped through the clerical class really, really quickly. So, and some people had guys that had the forethought, like, I need to write down all of this shit that's happening. But it just ripped through England.
Right.
Yeah. What we do have, though, is a short, eerie account from a man named Thomas Vincent. He wrote that London was beset by a dismal solitude, with closed stores, empty streets, and a deep silence in almost every corner of the city. Hmm. By his account, the only sounds were the groans of the sick and dying, punctuated by death knells endlessly emanating from churches.
They really did talk. Several people mentioned that in England, that was the soundtrack.
And specifically London.
London, crying in pain. People going, oh, jeez, all night. Mm-hmm. And then here in L.A., the streets were deserted, and the moans were people starting their OnlyFans accounts.
Isn't that nice? Very, very exciting.
Having fun.
Very nice. Very good. Very good.
Now, as we said last episode, London did make some attempt at treating their plague dead with as much respect as they could muster, even on days when carts, usually reserved for manure, showed up full to the burial pits. That's all they had. That was the only thing big enough to carry all these bodies.
Well, I mean, I guess we are literally bags of shit, so it's just shit kind of carrying human bags of shit. So it's still full of manure, I guess.
We're just piles of shit that can get diplomas.
Yeah.
Now, in those days, if the line was too long and the body had to be held above ground for a day or two, the bodies would be stuffed with charcoal and ash to slow the putrefaction process. Because remember, a lot of people believed the plague was spread by smell. And once the body was ready to take its place in the earth, it would be laid in a trench in a casket or a shroud, side by side with thousands of other bodies all laid with their head to the west and their feet to the east, sorted by gender and age, when possible.
Because in England, they did really try, specifically that's what you see in accounts, is that they tried to have respectful burials for the dead and not just dump everybody in giant plague pits.
I mean, can't I lay with a woman even when I'm dead? Why do you gotta separate us by gender? They should have gone with one boy, one girl, one boy, one girl. And everyone can have fun, and then they can procreate little skeleton babies.
Well, in England, and actually across all of Europe, the one thing that the plague actually did was really create will culture, almost, you could say. Like, the idea of saying, make people, like, really understand, you need to figure out what's gonna happen to your body and all of your shit after you die. So people did start making more specific requests about how they wanted to bury. So you can be buried 69 style with whatever woman that's near you who also dies in your neighborhood, if you want to, Kissel.
And if she also requests that.
Yes.
That's great. Well, Puffin has no choice. Jerry has no choice. They're dogs. So that's great. When you mentioned will culture, I get what you were saying, but then I was also like, I make this look good. I make this grave look good.
That's what they tried to do that, and they would dress you up in your finest, and they would put a bust of you dressed as your finest in the very top.
Did they really dress them in their nicest clothes?
They did. I mean, in London, they really did try as hard as they possibly could. I mean, they tried harder than some people did here in fucking New York last year.
There was just they're passing naked musician beggars. Give them the clothes. Okay, when I'm dead,
they're filled with fleas.
My clothes will go to the largest kids around. I don't care.
No, you cut them up, you fucking clothe the whole family.
Sure.
I can't wait to see all those cute, huge kids riffling through your mansion after you die like you're Ebenezer Scrooge.
Nice. How did he get a size 14 sock?
My neighbor died.
It's very different.
Well, now I put my lunch in it.
Isn't that nice?
Live from your grave.
My sister is the best gift giver I've ever met of any person. It's Jackie Zabrowski. She shops all year thinking about her family and friends and puts little things aside for their birthdays and Christmases. I have no idea how she does it. I don't know how she do it. But guess what? She always wins Mother's Day, but not this year. I'm coming back. Ready to win Mother's Day and cement your reputation as the best gift giver in the family? I'm taking the crown. All right, give the moms in your life an Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos. I mean this. We have the Aura frame up in my home. We absolutely love it. I can put photos on it very, very easily through the app. It's fun to do. And the memories keep cycling and I get emotional. And we filled it with pictures of Carmi and Wendy. And that is not sad. That is celebratory. So you should try it. It's honestly a really good product. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code LEFT at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. Last podcast on the left is sponsored by Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. With Squarespace, it's easy to create a beautiful website all on your terms. You don't want to miss Fluid Engine, because if you do, it ain't coming back around. It is a next-generation website design system from Squarespace with reimagined drag-and-drop technology for desktop or mobile. So let's say, we're doing well so far. We're moving these picks. If you want to move the Judge Reinhold non-clothed edition of a horse picks on the Clydesdale, you can drag it straight to your cart. It's that easy. You also can drag an entire giraffe ride trip for your family, because daddy gets the back of the head, right? You just drag that from the option menu straight to your cart and don't delete, because I'll know if you deleted. I'll know if you did it. Thanks to Squarespace. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/left to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Squarespace.com.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Now, legend had it that certain plague pits, like the cemetery in East Smithfield, buried 200 corpses per day during the Black Death, which would have put London's mortality rate at a stunning 65 to 80%.
Dang.
Today, however, the estimates at East Smithfield are closer to 18,000 bodies, which puts the estimated mortality rate at London at little less than 50%, putting the post-plague population at 35,000, down from 60. God.
That's just low enough for a politician to deny its existence.
I don't know.
Now, as per John Kelly's assessment, the plague in London, both in 1348 and the later outbreak of 1665, these things left imprints on the British DNA. For example, this is an excerpt from a chilling poem about the discovery of a plague ship written a couple hundred years later called The Black Death of Bergen. Sad the search and fearful finding. On the deck lay, parched and dry, men who in some burning, blinding clime had laid them down to die. Hands prayer clenched that would not sever, eyes that stared against the sun, sights that haunt the soul forever, poisoning life till life is done. No, those are some fucking Slayer lyrics, man.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
the haunt this of forever, poisoning life to life is done.
That's awesome. I mean, really sad and devastating, but that's a really good poem.
That's the thing. It's metal, though, at the same time.
No, the entire poem is beautiful. It's very long, but it is absolutely, it's a gorgeous poem, The Black Death of Bergen, by Lord Dufferin.
Oh.
There also was sort of, at the time, urban legend. It's kind of come out now, and there's some truth to the idea that the plague throughout all of the island of the UK, like through England, it destroyed entire villages, and that entire villages would be gone. They called them ghost villages, essentially like we call ghost towns, where they said that they would show up, and you just see animals, like one donkey walking, and that the entire village is dead. And now they're saying they don't know if that's completely true, but there is some evidence that shows there are these like uninhabited spots where they it seemed like five or six houses were built up, maybe a small market, and then it just got everybody in a hot second.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as I said last episode, it was a lot of those towns, what they think happened now is that those towns were kicked in the stomach real hard by the Great Famine, and then the Black Death and came and just finished them off.
And then there's also the straight up thing of people running. Because that was also, we saw it again in 1994, there was a plague outbreak in India. And they talk about one of the big things that happened again, the fucking 600 years later, people heard the plague was coming. And they just went to the big cities. They just heard everybody my buddy got plague. It's time to make a trip to Chinatown. Like, they literally went straight to downtown Delhi, and they were very lucky. There was only 5,000 cases of it. Wow. Something like 500 dead.
Okay. Yeah. Now, the Black Death by no means stopped in London. Rather, it blew right through and carried the plague to East Anglia, which, prior to the plague, was the most populated region in England. East Anglia is one of the places where the plague mortality averages in England were raised, because while the country had an overall mortality rate of 30 to 45%, East Anglia's was devastatingly higher. Norwich, for example, lost 70% of its population during the Black Death, and that's confirmed. Wow. 14,000 people. And in one manner, 21 families out of 50 were cut down like so much wheat behind a swinging scythe.
The Reaper abides! Man, it would be nice if the Reaper would help out with some farm work every now and again.
No, this scythe is for show, bro. Yeah, I'm you don't even the farm, dude.
Yeah, Reaper, it seems like you're kind of a pussy, bro.
No.
Yeah?
I have allergies, dude.
But in Norwich, people were not as precious with the dead as the gravediggers had been in London, nor were they as cruel as the sinister Bettini in Florence. Instead, the bodies were so numerous in Norwich that they were treated almost like dead livestock. By one account of a doctor, people tripped over the dead in the streets, and an endless stream of manure carts could be seen tilting loads of corpses into huge pits while the stench of putrefaction palpitated through the air.
Can I ask a true question? Why not just get a bunch of lighter fluid? I know they don't have it, but just why don't they just burn these bodies?
Because they thought that the air coming from it would kill you.
But that would be the worst possible thing to do.
In real life, or in their ideas?
In their mind, that would be the worst. If you wanted to kill the entire city, that's what you would do.
But okay, but I think that would be wrong though, because it feels like burning them.
You're right. Correct.
Okay,
that would have been the best thing to do.
Yes, because technically, it allowed more rats to come and the fleas and shit. And all of a sudden, you got a beaver there jerking off in the corner. Him and his buddy, another gerbil's there, just fucking doing whippets, saying like, aww, "Tonight's gonna be the fucking best night of our lives."
That is the drug a gerbil would do. They're crazy because they also can cook a little bit.
Oh, anyway. That's Ratatouille.
I know.
And Ratatouille's fake.
I didn't watch
it. It's not real.
I haven't seen it, but.
Well, in one story of familial near extinction in Norfolk, a woman named Emma Gosselin was engaged in a dispute with her husband Reginald over her dowry, and she'd taken her husband to court to settle the problem. No idea what the problem was, though.
I mean, honey, we're going through a massive global pandemic. Do we have to argue about the shoes right now?
Seriously.
It was a fucking exclusive drop. I had to get these shoes.
Yeah, I just don't.
I had to get these shoes.
Babe, everyone's dying, babe.
I know. And that's why the shipping's slow. But, you know, I got to get these goosebumps. High tops, man.
You better.
Well, by records, Emma had planned to bring several witnesses to testify on her behalf for whatever her reason for taking her husband to court. But when her court date finally came just a few months later, Emma LaGosselin showed up alone because both her husband and all of her witnesses had all died of the plague since.
Dude, this chick had this so planned out.
Yep.
And she fantasized about the judge like, crying, looking at her with sympathy.
Single life is going to be sweet. I can't wait to get out of this. And then everybody dies.
She was going to destroy her husband one witness at a time.
It is
and
very,
she didn't get to do that.
It is very difficult to have Stella get her groove back during the bubonic plague.
Yeah. That's too bad. That sucks.
The groove is decidedly gone.
It is gone. There's no more grooves. They're all filled with dead bodies.
Now, as far as how people treated each other in England during the Black Death went, they were mostly free of the anti-Semitism that had infected mainland Europe. Instead, England was awash with a rogues gallery of scalawags who took advantage wherever they could.
What is the legal definition of scalawag?
A kidnapper or a pupperdonter.
Oh, a pupperdonter. A pupperdonter, as I thought, is a father who took his liberties with his children.
I don't know.
I think a scalawag is somebody who's a scofflaw. More like a scofflaw, yeah. Scoffing at the law. A scalawag.
Oh, here we go. The scalawag definition. A person who behaves badly, but in an amusingly mischievous rather than harmful way. A rascal.
That's not true. Scallywags were from Clockwork Orange. Those guys were scallywags, and they killed and did a whole bunch of horrible stuff.
Yep.
I think that's the modern term for scalawag. Back in the 14th century, you didn't want to come into contact with a scalawag. Scalawag's going to fuck you up. Steal
absolutely
all your money.
They actually called white Southerners who collaborated with the Northern Republicans during Reconstruction scalawags.
Well, isn't that nice?
Huh. So maybe that's now we can just take that as a term of like, yeah, I'm a scalawag.
Fuck yeah,
yeah,
bro.
Yeah, cool. Yeah,
if
fuck
you
yeah
want to identify as a scalawag, go for it.
Well, as far as these scalawags went, there was One Day William, who was a priest who robbed people 6 days a week and celebrated Mass on the 7th. So,
it's a fucking premier television show.
Six on, one off.
Yeah, yeah. You also had Henry Annies, who specialized in scamming people with bogus tax fraud schemes. Specifically, Henry told people that he had a foolproof method for avoiding the death tax on inherited properties, but he would only reveal this method if the customer agreed to a heavy price.
It's always been here, man.
I know.
Always.
I'm just thinking of the guy who I know is actually a good dude, but the dude covered in question marks, the guy in the
Matthew
suit.
Oh, Matthew Lesko.
Yeah, he's not. But wow, that is amazing. There's still entrepreneurship.
Yes.
Even then, isn't that nice?
One woman named Alice Bakeman, for example, gave Henry one of her best milking cows in exchange for this hot tip. Now, of course, the tip was always bogus, but by the time the tax authorities saw through the ruse, Henry Annis was always long gone.
Now I got this new cow to fuck.
Isn't that nice?
But those were the more clever thieves who operated during the Black Death. Most thieves, like William Siggy, simply operated in a manner that today would be more accurately described as meth head crimes.
Oh, very nice.
Copper stripping.
Well, yeah, dude.
Being late to doctor's appointments.
You mock and you laugh at the copper stripper, but they make a lot of good money, and it ain't easy to do.
Dude, Siggy stole pots and pans from dead neighbors' cottages, altered the boundary of another dead neighbor's farm to expand his own, and he regularly stripped the lead from other dead neighbors' roofs like so much construction site copper.
Wow.
This guy had it all worked out. Right now, he would just be on a show called Extreme Moonshiners.
Yeah. Extreme Black Plaguers.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. I'll make this plague look good.
This next one. This is the Extreme Black Plaguer, Catherine Bugsy. Now, no one knew how Catherine Bugsy survived as long as she did. But her specialty was stripping the clothing from the plague dead and reselling them, spreading even more plague.
I'll tell you more secret. I ate fleas.
You eat fleas. Okay, tolerance.
I eat like cereal.
Yeah.
And I log it to bite my tongue. Well, little kisses there. That's what I call them. Little kisses to back my throat.
It seems to work. Were there people who were not susceptible to the plague?
Catherine Bugsy, apparently.
So she I mean, because we see the, you know, obviously with our, one, with our more recent social experiment of what we've had go on here, some people just straight up don't get the new virus.
You want to hear a quote that comes right out of fucking 2021 from 1300? This is from the year 600, the plague of Justinian, and the same shit that we're dealing with now.
Whether by chance or providential design, the pestilence strictly spared the most wicked.
Oh, yeah. So Miss Bugsy, not very good.
No, and there was also, like we talked about last week, that you know, someone had written on the walls, I think, of Bristol, that was like, only the dregs remain. That was what that people wrote over and over and over again during the Black Death, is that only the worst people survived until the end of it.
All right, take a look at yourself. You're shitting your own freaking intestines out of your ass right now and vomiting everywhere, so maybe you're the dregs.
Whoa.
Whoa, wow.
Victim blaming.
I'm not victim blaming. I'm just saying, just because I'm not sick doesn't mean that I'm lesser than you.
Well, I mean, it was mostly they were looking at people like Catherine Bugsy, who was stripping dead people naked and then spreading the plague to other people.
They shouldn't have buried them in their nicest clothes. I don't know why I have to defend this.
I don't know what happened. You turn into a pundit.
Other than the resale without the washing,
Kissel just actually transformed. He's like wearing a suit. He's got a little bow tie. His hair is put into a pompadour. What happened? You just turned into Tucker Carlson of the Black Death.
$100,000 for 15% of your company, Miss Bugsy.
Well, I mean, the reason why they saw this is because, I get it, because the good people tried helping. Like, they tried helping the sick. They didn't want to abandon people to the death, and they didn't run. So, of course, all those people died, and, you know, and other people that were just the absolute fucking worst were the ones who survived till the end.
And now we know that the Black Death is also one of the main inspirations for Billy Joel's Only the Good Die Young.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah, when Catherine Bugsy was finally arrested with a dead woman's leather jerkin, she was the picture of health.
The picture of health for 1300s in London.
Yeah, man.
I got two teeth still.
That's amazing. If no one else has any.
I wanna fuck this woman.
Absolutely. Rabbit gal. Two teeth.
Woo.
Now, eventually, the plague began to make its way north, where it ravaged Yorkshire amidst a small peasant rebellion that occurred when the labor class refused to pay fines amidst all of the widespread death. And by what some people say could have happened, the Black Death very well may have stopped in Yorkshire and not crossed over to Scotland, or at least not crossed over in great numbers. But when the Scots heard that a horrific disease was ripping through the hated English, they became convinced that this was specifically an English problem that couldn't affect the Scots.
Yeah, man.
I love drunk logic of the Scots.
I blame beer.
Yes. This is just such wow.
In fact, the Scots were actually laughing at the widespread devastation. They thought the plague ripping through England was the funniest fucking thing they ever saw, and they were swearing by the foul death of England. And eventually, this jubilation turned into pig-headed overconfidence.
Oh, no way.
Not the Scots. And in 1350, the Scots amassed an army near the forest of Selkirk, fully prepared to invade England and take it as their own. Because
we're
going to
get it, boys. We'll get the whole damn thing.
And they're all
like, it's true. They created a massive war party. They all got hammered. They're all like, we're going to fucking get we're going to get them tonight.
Just
they're all slapping each other in the face.
Fueled by iron brew.
And they all believed that they were immune from the plague, that they wouldn't get it. That because
they looked at this cool little fucking, I got so excited, my neck is expanding like I'm one of those dinosaurs.
It is.
You remember that? Look at that, I'm a Diplodocus.
Yeah, it looks like you're choking on a big egg there.
What's wrong with me?
I don't know.
I must be hungover before I start to drink.
Yeah, I think that was the problem.
Yeah. They thought they were immune just because they were Scottish. And the reason why the Black Plague and the reason why the Black Plague hadn't just like ran its way up through Scotland like it did the rest of England, the reason why it was a little slower was because Scotland's fucking cold. Like it doesn't have the weather is horrible for the Black Plague. But the fucking Scots on the border, before they could even wage one attack, the Black Death found its way into the Scottish camp.
Oh,
5,000 Scots very quickly died on the border, while the rest, infected and carrying plague rats in their wake, retreated, all while the English followed and killed as many Scots as they could.
Because it's definitely like, go, go, we're going! And then 5,000 guys die. Time to go home!
We gotta Man, I can just see the Black Plague having to go to that store and get a little Black Plague jacket and a little Black Plague hat so they can go into Scotland because it's so cold.
Those that survived the battles with the English brought the plague to Scotland in large numbers and killed a large chunk of their population when there was really no need for them to do so.
So although, they could...
although it did only kill a third of the Scottish population instead of like, you know, up to 45% because it was cold.
So the only reason that it even affected Scotland at all is because they went to it to yell at it. It was just like, I'm a virus. It's bacteria. So it doesn't matter. It doesn't care.
Yeah.
Probably would have gotten there anyway because it did go with trading routes. Right. So it eventually would get there, I imagine, because it did go all over Europe. So it would have gotten there, but they definitely accelerated it.
Oh man, I'm gonna start. I'm just so happy men are still like in leadership roles.
Nothing has changed.
Nothing has changed. Nope. It's just this is like the biggest super spreader event of the Black Death, where they're just fucking taking it and going back all over to fucking Scotland and just dropping it every fucking place that they go to.
Oh, it's so dumb.
Now, as far as Ireland went, we know that the death rate for Anglo-Irish was about the same as the English, while we have no idea how many of the native Irish died. But from what one 17th century Irishman wrote, the pestilence made great havoc among the English invaders. But for the true Irishman, born and dwelling in the hilly countries, it scarce just saluted them.
Oh, isn't that nice?
Well, it depends on the cycle of where you live. It depends on where you live, right? If you live out in the boonies, right, it's difficult for it to transfer as quickly because if it gets to one village, it kills everybody and then it doesn't spread anywhere.
If I was the Black Death, I would leave Ireland alone. It's nice. Go have a nice settle there. You know, and then you go attack elsewhere.
Oh, that's where you retire.
Yes.
Yeah. You know what's funny is that, Henry, you mentioned last episode about, you know, if you want to survive the Black Death, you get on a boat in Scotland and take it to Iceland. That would have worked for 50 years because for some reason, Iceland's Black Death, like their Black Plague, happened at the turn of the 15th century. And half of their population died in like 1400. Jeez. And then 100 years later, it happened again. And people are still kind of baffled as to how it happened. They're really not sure because the Black Rat never took hold in Iceland. So they're not sure, like, how the fuck did this happen twice?
How did it
happen 50 years after?
It's beavers traveling on logs.
It's very possible.
It's another one.
Yeah, it's possible.
Live from your grave.
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix. Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match 2 of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong.
Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
They say plants like music. Yeah, no, like really, they respond to the vibrations of it, which means that this playlist you're listening to, the plants are too. You know what else plants like? Organic soil from Miracle-Gro. It's made with all the best stuff like wood fiber and compost. Plus, it's OMRI certified organic, which officially means it's made with superior ingredients. And when you give your plants the stuff that makes them happy, they won't judge you on your iffy playlist.
Hear that, plants?
So go ahead and give them Miracle-Gro.
But right around the same time that the Black Death was entering the homeland of my ancestors in England, it was also taking a toll on Henry's ancestral land of Poland. Although Poland's death toll was much, much lower.
Oh. Yes, it is one of the curious things.
Are you about to brag about the Polish people?
Are the Polish immune to disease? Yes.
Maybe.
You know what does it? Vodka.
Oh.
It really stills the blood. No, there is a... The survival of the Polish is over-accentuated because it seems like the rest of Europe, the problem is the rest of Europe, it was 40 to 60%, right, killed, that the mortality rate. In Poland, it was like 20 to 30%, but mostly it had to do with because they were cold. And there was one theory that I saw that it was because Poland had a lot of cats.
Oh, honestly, that could save the day, although wouldn't the fleas hop on the cats?
Hmm. Interesting.
Fuck!
I mean, they would.
Fuck! Well, I don't know, because I don't know if the same fleas, the rat fleas, are the same as cat fleas. We don't know.
We don't know.
Some what? they don't trade back and forth. And also, there's some talk that the Communist Party that ran Poland for a long period of time, like all the kind of shit that went down, obviously during after World War One or World War Two, is when everyone was doing their Black Death research. Various countries were going through looking over historical records. The Communists didn't want to do that. Oh. So there is also some things that they say that maybe the numbers were also miscalculated because they weren't researching it properly.
Not in Poland. Nah. Nothing would be miscalculated in Poland.
What I think is most interesting about Poland, though, is that their king, King Casimir, had a Jewish mistress named Esther, and the king, therefore, offered asylum to Jews fleeing persecution in Central Europe during the Black Death. Those Jewish refugees settled in Poland and established communities that would remain unbroken from the 14th century until the 20th, when the Nazis almost wiped them out for good, partly by using the same basic conspiracy theories that had driven the Jews to Poland in the first place.
Come and join and have a ticket to the Kissel party bus.
Oh, right.
It is a bit of a party on the bus.
That would be a true party bus. My goodness, if you're Jewish at this time, it's like, we have an answer. You're going to be safe. You guys have a one-way ticket to Poland. And you're just like, wow, this is great. Can't wait to go to Poland. It reminds me, in Wisconsin, the Hmong helped us fight the Viet Cong in the Vietnam War. And many of them were sent to Wisconsin, which, again, is a bit of a culture shock.
It is.
In both mood and temperature. It gets quite cold.
But during the Black Death in Europe, it wasn't just the regular folk dying of the plague. We mentioned this a little bit earlier. Spain actually lost its king in March of 1350, when King Alfonso XI contracted the deadly disease during a siege at Gibraltar, making him the only European monarch to die of the plague.
Yeah, we got one.
Wow. That's actually a fairly impressive number.
Well, it's because they were far away from all of it. They were far away from all of it, and a lot of the times they went to their vacation palaces.
Right.
Or like the Clement VI, he actually was trying to fix it and accidentally stumbled upon shit that worked.
Yeah. Furthermore, there is evidence from several accounts that suggest that Spain was actually host to the deadliest, scariest, and fastest acting form of the plague, the septicemic plague.
Mm.
Briefly covered in our first episode, the septicemic plague is 100% fatal and kills in less than 24 hours, guaranteed, and never became widespread only because of how fast it kills the infected.
It turns you into raspberry jelly.
Oh,
yeah.
That doesn't sound fun.
One tale told by a French cleric said that the priest was visiting Spain on a pilgrimage during the plague and stopped at an inn. That night, he ate dinner with the family at the inn and sensed that nothing was amiss. The next morning, though, when he called out for assistance, he received no answer. And when he searched the inn, he found that the entire family had caught the plague the night before and it died before the sun rose.
Oh my God.
Septicemic does it that fast.
Woo. Yeah. And there are a lot of stories like that. Now, some countries like the Netherlands were somewhat spared the worst of it, losing only 15 to 25% of their population. However, the reason why the Netherlands only lost 15 to 25% was because the Netherlands had already lost more children than any other country during the Great Famine, and therefore had less vulnerable people. Again, worst century to be alive.
It doesn't wow. ever stop, never stopping.
It really doesn't.
As far as Scandinavia went, it was sparsely populated and, of course, cold, so the plague had a hard time traveling from town to town. But it was still said that if a Scandinavian did catch the plague, they didn't live for more than a day or two after they started vomiting blood, implying that it was the pneumonic plague that haunted the northern reaches.
Can you imagine how much the fucking that stank, too, with all the weird pickled herring they eat and all the clams, all that fish guts coming up with your vomit plague blood? That's a lot. But then Scandinavia also had pesta. The plague hag. That idea of like the plague hag.
What's that?
Because we talked about plague virgins last time. I actually saw, I had someone send an email comparing it to Corona Chan. We talked, remember at the beginning of the quarantine, we talked about the idea of the physicalization of COVID into sort of an anime girl. The plague virgins like that. This is another story of the plague hag, which is this idea that you'd see an old woman ringing a bell, and as she passed through town, everyone would die of the plague. But actually, that was the retrofitting of after everybody normally died in a village of the plague, whoever lived would ring bells to be like, I'm still alive, come get me.
But then they were just like, you did it, and then they would probably kill her.
Oh, they do. Yeah. Just let her die. You know what I mean? Hit her with a rock or something.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, in Norway, King Magnus II came up with a novel and somewhat innocent idea to fight the Black Death. Ben, I think you're actually really going to like this one.
You are going to like this one.
Let's hear it. Let's hear it out.
He instituted theme days.
Like I think that's actually one of the most brilliant ideas I've ever heard. You don't even have to go into the themes quite yet, but I think right now, if I was that man's, if I was that dude's chief of staff, I would say, sir, let me suck your dick.
Nacho Cheese Day.
Up with that.
Everybody's favorite decade day.
Everyone's favorite decade. They hit, remember the 80s day?
Yeah, the 1280s.
Yes. Remember the 1280s?
Yeah, it was great because the serpents were president.
I love that. What kind of ideas are we talking here?
There was foodless Fridays.
He wouldn't like that.
That's sad. That's
Well, you could have bread and water, but just no fish or meat.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Or but you could have bread or water. Then there was shoeless Sundays.
Easy going.
That's actually nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Where you weren't allowed to wear shoes to church.
I don't like the idea of not being allowed to. I think it should be optional, but okay.
Like shoeless Sunday.
Oh, no. This was very much mandatory.
Okay.
This was absolutely mandatory. Because
God had not got to kill you.
Okay.
Well, yeah. He believed that this would... He was trying to appease what he believed was a wrathful God. And he was trying to spare Norway of the fate that befell his warmer neighbors to the south. And as far as he was concerned, it did kind of work because people in Norway didn't die in as high numbers and as high percentages as people, you know, south of them did.
So this guy really thought that the sky cuck in the clouds, God, was going to just own... Why would God want to see our feet on Sunday? Is God just jerking off to us looking at a fish on Friday?
I don't know.
Why? I just don't...
Because...
I'm starting to think that these are human institutions.
This was an actual movement throughout a lot of Europe, where what they would do is mass prayer days. One of the big things that the church, because, you know, at the time, it wasn't really the Catholic Church. They just called it the TC, the church.
Sure.
Right? They wanted to organize mass prayer days where every single person would meet and do something like 10 times a day where they would pray be saved from the plague, pray for their monarchy, pray for the clergy, pray for everybody. The idea is their idea was that if we just keep pushing God, we'll get this going. We'll do a GoFundMe. We're going to get this petition of God signed, and then he's going to end the plague. And so there was a lot of mass movement. So he thought that if you did a coordinated, like, hey, God, we're sorry. We're sorry. Like, as in one voice, that maybe God would cancel the plague.
I'm going to say this on behalf of humanity for all of time. We've never deserved any of this shit. All humans have ever wanted to do was eat and fuck.
Learn this.
That's all we've ever wanted to do.
Kissel,
human beings are not innately horrible.
That's real wisdom. Yeah. Internalize that. You are not at fault for COVID-19.
No.
You're not at fault for the plague.
No. No, I mean, people are still doing this shit. You remember the COVID preacher, the guy that just screamed and yelled and people made those awesome fucking metal remixes of it?
Yeah.
People are still, they still do it today.
Well, they definitely didn't stop eating on Friday, I'll tell you that.
No. It is food full Friday.
Yes, it is.
From Scandinavia, the plague crossed the Baltic Sea and re-entered Russia, where it swept through Novgorod and Moscow. Incredibly, the plague had now come full circle and was just 700 miles north of the formerly besieged city of Kaffa, 4 years after a Mongolian siege had sent plague ships from Kaffa's port to Sicily.
There was one thing I read that kind of sent a shiver up my spine. It said if you look at the line that the plague made around Europe, you could see the noose it had drawn around the continent.
Interesting. It's sort of like when Bruce Springsteen, he started in New Jersey, and then he went to L.A. and was like, but then he realized his true love was in New Jersey, that woman that he married, and then he went back to New Jersey. And it's almost like he made a noose around America.
Yeah. Springsteen's
the noose tour.
Songwriter noose.
A horribly named tour. Horribly.
I was upset, but I still went.
I can't. I would love to see him.
He performs for 8 hours.
I'm seeing him. Marcus, we're going to see Springsteen.
Sure.
I don't know when, but we're doing it.
Bruce Springsteen's concerts actually have a mortality rate of 45%. The last time I saw him, he played for 14 hours.
That's amazing.
But after 4 years of constant death, Europe found that the deadliest strain of Yersinia pestis to ever exist had somewhat anticlimactically burned itself out.
What?
People very suddenly stopped dying by the thousands and, in fact, weren't dying of the plague at all, or at least not the horrifying, bloody, pus-filled, gangrenous blood vomit plague. But when people were ready to accept that the great mortality was at an end, they reacted in much the same way that people are reacting today. They drank heavily, spent lavishly, ate gluttonously, dressed extravagantly, and fornicated with abandon.
They said in Italy, they created 52 new religious holidays.
Oh, great.
So they were like, we're adding vacation days to the calendar.
Great.
We're just doing it. I that is very interesting. Also, the beliefs, the inner worship of almost like their version of comic book heroes. Have you done any research into the 14 Holy Helpers?
No.
The 14 Holy Helpers were the plague saints that kind of came about. That, like, the very end of the plague, people started praying to hyper-specific certain saints, like Saint Sebastian, the guy that's like, you see the one who's tied up with all the arrows in him, and he's the BDSM saint?
Sure.
And they would create these sort of like frescoes and paintings of these saints fighting like skeletons and demons that were essentially the personification of the plague. So I think it technically is the first comic books.
Okay, yeah, makes sense.
Well, perhaps the most overt act of life over death, symbolically at least, after the plague, occurred in Orvieto, Italy, where couples actually fucked on the grass that had been laid over the recently closed plague pits.
I mean, anytime you walk in Washington Square Park, you're walking over a massive grave. Everywhere you walk is a massive grave. I am happy these people are having a fuck party, getting lit, eating food. Enjoy it while you can.
It helped create the earliest forms of gonorrhea.
Oh, no kidding. Isn't that nice?
That's true.
That's wonderful.
In the words of one chronicler from Siena, no one could restrain themselves from doing anything. But even though people seemed to be having a great time, this was, in fact, a reaction to being deeply traumatized.
Of course.
Shut up, Marcus! I'm not traumatized!
Well, honestly, we're not as traumatized as they
were. I'm just feverishly having a good time for no fucking reason!
You need to have fun!
You do need to have fun. But a psychiatrist named James Westfall Thompson noticed that the way people behaved after the Black Plague was exactly how people in the Lost Generation behaved after World War I. In his view, the behavior in both was marked by fairly superficial waves of gaiety, debauchery, extravagance, and gluttony, all done to try and tamp down the unimaginable horrors that they'd all seen and experienced. And I would assume the same didn't happen after World War II, because the horrors were no longer unimaginable.
Right. And of course, let's not forget, after World War II, the buffet was invented. And once you have buffets, then it's very difficult to have sadness.
You could serve yourself. You don't have to deal with the tyrants of chefs telling you how much you can eat.
Yeah, they look at you when you ask for seconds, and they're like, this isn't your mom's house. And you're like, well, you know, I wish it was, but my mother's dead. And
yeah, my mom's my mom's a fucking corpse. Yeah, so bring me ribs.
Anyway, that's why you got to go to your golden corrals.
But perhaps building off of this so-called moral decline, people found that they also didn't need the church quite as much as they thought they did once it was all said and done. See, the decline in the church's power after the Black Death was both literal and symbolic. Since the plague killed peasant and priest alike, the church came out of the Black Death with seriously thinned ranks, and the priests who had survived were either highly corrupt, very young, or poorly trained. And in some cases, all three.
They had a very secure track that you were supposed to be on to be a priest, to be a member of the clergy. You were raised, and most of the time you had to be of noble lineage and to even be able to be on the track, to be educated in order to go and be whatever your position was going to be within the clergy.
Sure.
But once it wiped out all the noble families, then anybody could be a priest. And the problem is that when anybody can be a priest, most of the time it means scumbags are going to be priests.
It's like what Twitter did to the celebrity class.
Yep.
The general public had also taken particular note of the fact that the church had given no help that couldn't have been given by any other person. Finally, it was mostly the dregs of the priests who survived, and those left behind charged unreasonably high prices to serve a local church. So it just left a bad taste. The church left a bad taste in everyone's mouth.
Yeah, it seems like they failed miserably and killed a lot of people for no reason. And then obviously, once people realize they don't provide the safety net they promised, well, fuck them.
Of course. Yeah. Philip Ziegler is the historian that was kind of talking about how this was. They think, there's several historians that believe that if the Black Plague didn't happen, medieval world might have continued kind of closely the way it was already continuing for a long time. Mm-hmm. But that this doubt in the main church is probably what planted the seeds that would create the Renaissance and the Reformation, when all Protestant religions would also become about, because it shone a light into how corrupt the whole system had become.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. But really, the end of those four horrible years was just the end of the beginning of the second plague pandemic. It just happened to be the worst one out of the hundreds of plague outbreaks all over Europe in the centuries to come.
It was great. That's awesome.
Well, because there is research. It's fun.
It's fun to think about. Like, just put it in your head and just think about it for a little
while.
There.
And centuries. Then in 1994, they actually discovered strains of Y. pestis that are actually immune to antibiotics. So who knows when that's going to come about. I don't know when that's going to really be unleashed.
I just can't believe Domino's brought the Noid back.
That's what I'm upset about.
About a decade after the Great Mortality, the plague returned in a less lethal form, killing about 20% of the populations it infected instead of 50. The second plague, however, struck the young more than the old and came to be known as the Children's Plague.
Oof,
one more time, dark. Worst century to be alive.
God dang. But you also think about the OG plague, the grandpa plague, and then he looks at his generation, he looks at his great-grandson plague, and you're like, you're only killing 20%? This is just so typical of the new plague generation. They don't understand how to kill 85%. I was killing 85%, now you're killing 20%.
I am so sick of these pandemic Zoomers.
It is just unbelievable. Get off your butt, plague, and stop playing plague video games and go kill people, please.
From there, the plague returned about once a decade throughout Europe for centuries afterward, mm-hmm. but with a much lower mortality rate of 10 to 15%. But there was one notable exception. See, just as the second plague pandemic started with a bang, so too did it dramatically end. In 1665, 307 years after the Black Death first hit England, the capital was hit with what came to be known as the Great Plague of London. In just 18 months, 100,000 people, a quarter of London's population, died of the bubonic plague in what was to be the last large outbreak of the second plague pandemic. And it finally ended in the somewhat appropriate year of 1666.
That's a really great time to end.
Wow, that's fun.
Mark of the Beaver, man.
Mark of the Beaver. You know, Mark of the Beaver. Wow.
But what was different here is that the plague was moving far slower. Instead of jumping from city to city in a matter of days, weeks, or months, this strain of the plague crept from neighborhood to neighborhood. And instead of killing huge groups all at once, it stuck to clusters of people. Like, for example, like people who all slept in the same bed, or wore the same clothes, or lived on the same lane. This new kind of plague, the crawling plague, if you will, was also responsible for the third plague pandemic, which began in 1855 and ended in 1960, killing up to 15 million people in China and India over a period of 105 years.
Maybe it's a spurious correlation, but look what happened in the 60s. Everyone was smoking weed, man. And the weed killed weed killed the plague, dude.
Before, man. You know what's also interesting is I want to really look at, there is a lot of studies that talk about the combination of earthquakes and plague.
Yeah,
but how earthquakes would happen. Like an Iceland earthquake happened, an England earthquake happened, and then what it does is it rustles up all the rats. They like it, something happens, it creates a disturbance in their life, and all of a sudden the rats are ready to go.
Don't piss off these freaking rats, man.
But don't, they're skittish.
They're you can scary. Just
keep them happy and keep them away. Mm. But the other difference is that while all those plagues were indeed horrible, they were not the same plague that devastated Europe starting in 1348. There was no blood vomit, no malodorous smell, and no gangrenous inflammation of the throat and lungs. In other words, while the plague is indeed still terrible, it isn't as bad as it used to be. And isn't that nice?
Isn't that nice? It's almost like God wanted to flip to more PG programming. And he said, you know, it was really nice when we were in the Attitude Era, but let's not have any more chair shots to the head.
Well, it shows that the viruses and bacteria, these types of things, they evolve to be less deadly so they can live longer.
Oh, well, the best explanations we have for this is that the Black Death, or after the Black Death, Yersinia pestis either returned to being a rat disease because it risked burning out its host population, or it was a marmot strain that really did burn itself out by 1352. It just killed as many people as it could. It reached the end of the road.
By the way, that reminds me, we have our new weed line. Check out Embers here in LA. We actually have the marmot strain.
Our marmot strain.
Yeah, it's really good. It makes you feel like a beaver.
It's so good. It's contagious.
Ooh, it's so good. Yeah.
But even besides dealing with the plague for centuries afterward, Europe was besieged by other diseases that killed almost as many. In 1426, a flu epidemic killed 7% of the population. And between 1485 and 1551, a mysterious disease called the English sweat killed 10% of Europe.
It actually was a series of exercise tapes. And they weren't ready for the exertion. It's so hard in England for them to get any cardio because of their Adam's apples. It presses against the windpipe.
Absolutely. Sweating to the 1680s or whatever era we're in now.
And that's not even getting into outbreaks of smallpox, which smallpox was known as the Red Plague. And while
that's
smallpox,
the Sammy Hagar of plagues.
Oh, that's cool.
And while smallpox ravaged Europe at rates that rivaled the Black Death at times, it absolutely destroyed the indigenous people of North America once it crossed the ocean. And I think this is we've said it before, but this bears repeating and this bears remembering. Smallpox killed 90% of the indigenous population in North America.
It's an act of biological warfare. Also, Henry, did you want to make a joke?
I just want to say, I mean, like, you know, they got the blankets, but thank God we didn't give them pillows. Because then there goes the other 10%.
Jesus Christ.
I'm just scared. Wow. No, unbelievable, though. That is so fascinating that, anyway.
And we didn't, I mean, the Europeans that came over, like, they, at first, they didn't know. And then once they figured it out, they definitely took advantage of it.
Yeah, let's harness this.
Yeah, but like smallpox, flu, none of that stuff was in
all I know is when that
America.
Show was going on, my people were in Poland burying people with their butts sticking out of the ground so they have a place to park their bikes. All right? That's what my people were doing.
Admittedly, my people were coming over. Admittedly, my people were coming over here and probably spreading smallpox and all kinds of shit. My first ancestor was like 1600s, so like wolf trapper. So yeah, definitely.
Guilty!
I didn't come over. My folks didn't come here until 1960.
Yeah, they were chased here.
No.
Well, in addition to all that, all those diseases, you also had dysentery all across Europe that was due to, of course, poor sanitation. Because you get shit in your food sometimes, you swallow shit, you're going to get sick. And that was responsible for the 50% mortality rate of infants in the Middle Ages.
50. Oh my God, 50%. Oh goodness.
50%. But speaking of that mortality rate, the Black Death had long-lasting consequences on how long people lived, even after it was over. See, when things were solid in the 14th century, an English boy in Essex could expect to live to the age of 54 pretty dependably once he grew past the danger zone of childhood and entered puberty. Once you get to puberty, you're all fucking good.
Okay. Yeah, because then you can't get picked up by a hawk, you can't fall into the shit river and drown. Mm-hmm.
Except, I guess Richard the Raker didn't, he was a full-grown man.
Absolutely, can't fall in love with a turtle, climb on its back, and have it go into the water, and then you drown.
You think that's the thing that happens?
Sure, you can.
I wish I lived in your mind where every day's a fairy tale, Kissel.
I'm saying it's possible. If you're a kid, you're like, that's a turtle, and you cry, you climb on its back, and then it goes into the water, and then
you're describing a dream you had when you were a child?
I think so.
No, I'm saying I've been looking at a lot of turtle content lately. The turtle is amazing. It lives in its own house.
You live in your house. We live in houses.
I know, but we move out of our houses. Anyway, fascinating.
But...
it is fascinating, the fake thing you said.
Are fascinating, yes.
Fascinating.
But by the mid-15th century, that same boy who could have expected to live to 54 a century earlier, he had lost 14% of his lifespan. Wow. And could only expect to live to 48 years of age if he was lucky. Because while society had held in many ways, it took centuries for Europe to fully recover from all of the cascading effects of the Black Death.
See, the boy is lucky because man becomes perfect at 48. And then
you think so?
You're done. Yeah, then you slowly slide into despondency and irrelevance.
Well, I think that would be horrible if you got dementia at 49.
No, I'm just saying that's just when people stop liking your shit on Instagram.
Oh, yes, that makes sense. That makes sense.
But even though life was fucking awful for almost everyone who lived through the Black Death, it changed the way that Europe worked in fundamental ways that still echo into today's society. By the end of the Black Death, the wealthy owner class and the labor class had switched places when it came to who held the power.
Huh.
Because so many people had died, there were fewer people who could do work both skilled and unskilled, and therefore, workers of all stripes could demand higher wages for the first time.
If you look at some of the way these aristocrats bitch from the 1350s about how hard it was to find laborers, and then you look at comments made on certain news sites and on our cable news about people not returning to work.
Oh, sure.
They are
bullshit.
Exactly the same.
And to that exactly. I say, do you have two hands, Mr. Aristocrat? Do you have 2 feet, Mr. Aristocrat?
That is
then why don't you go to work?
It is just complaining about how no one wants to work anymore because they're used to not working
right.
and paying someone to do work for them. And they are just, they couldn't pay them enough.
And paying them very, very very little.
That's the
very
key.
Very little. That's the
key. The
key
is to make sure that you just barely pay them so that you can show them monetarily what they mean to you. They're just essentially robot workers to you.
Yeah. I'm thinking these aristocrats got to bring back the Noid.
It's too late. You were just bemoaning the return of the Noid.
I don't know. I'm telling you what they're doing. They're bringing back the Noid.
Well, at the same time, an overabundance of crops and livestock, because everyone was fucking dead, no one was eating them, that dropped food prices. And that, coupled with high labor cost, hurt the lords and helped the peasants.
Woohoo.
In addition to that, women gained new economic power because they were able to step into jobs that were traditionally male pre-plague. And they did it just as well as the men did.
An interesting side quest for you is to look up the Ciompi Revolt, C-I-O-M-P-I, which is the worker revolt that happened in Italy that was very interesting right after the plague.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, King Edward very quickly tried passing laws in England to freeze wages at pre-plague levels. And he also tried to make it illegal to refuse employment from a lord. Does any of this sound fucking familiar?
It's wild.
No, I actually don't understand what you guys are talking about here.
Finally, but people did take this job and shove it because they would go like, you come back here, sir, and you'll do the hay like you do. I don't know how you make it into those Swiss rolls. The big lumps. You put it in the lumps right now, sir. And then go, fuck you, man.
Yeah.
And then just walk in the woods. Because they just walk in the woods. You can't find them.
Yeah. Yeah. But the workers, merchants, and tradesmen who were, for all intents and purposes, the new middle class, they held strong. They knew for the first time in their lives, possibly the first time in European history, as far as they fucking knew, they could demonstrably prove that the rich needed the workers more than the workers needed the rich.
Hell yeah. Because that's a fact.
Because the power structures that kept the status quo had fallen apart just enough.
But also, what is interesting about humankind is that they still manage to keep certain levels of order amongst themselves.
Yeah.
Like, humans really understood at the time, no, we actually can take care of us. We don't need the church. We can create our own little fringe religions. We can actually release ourselves from our own sins. Because they gave us permission to. The church, when everybody was dying, basically said, forgive yourselves if you would for a little while. So they learned we don't need them. Yeah.
And at this point, the middle class also started building their own churches for the first time, which was something that was reserved for lords. So they
the chantry chapels.
Yeah.
And then humans never did anything wrong again.
Never again. And it was fixed. Nailed it. Also, this was the first time that artists could make a true living and become like merchants and artists became the middle class. And so they could dress in the fineries of the aristocracy for the first time. They were able to wear silk and buttons.
Oh, and you know, artists, they deserve that. Artists love it. Artists love that stuff.
Uh-huh. But of course, the establishment, once they started seeing all these people in the finest silk and buttons that were supposed to be reserved for the lords, they actually passed laws that banned peasants from owning silk, silver buckles, fur-lined coats, anything that would allow the appearance of putting on airs.
You're going to take my fucking drip?
They would. Absolutely, they would.
Yeah, just wait for that. When they ban you from fucking wearing Jordans.
That's when I go to the Capitol.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And of course, all this shit partly led to the Peasants' Revolt of 1381. But in the end, the peasants gained enough ground where overt feudalism became a thing of the past, and upward mobility was that much closer to being a reality for everyone, where before was not a fucking option. Furthermore, workers demanding higher wages partly resulted in some of the most incredible advances in technology ever seen in human history. And this is very interesting because it has some modern parallels with the arguments that people have against raising minimum wage. See, in the low-wage days prior to the plague, one could still make books at a reasonable price using several copyists who wrote each page by hand.
Dang.
But after the plague, those same copyists demanded higher wages, and they were therefore too expensive to make bookmaking sustainable, at least on a large scale. It became a much more tiny boutique thing. But at just the same time, Johann Gutenberg he was perfecting the printing press in about 1350, and in the decades after the plague, printed knowledge, available for the first time in human history, changed the world forever and ended up creating hundreds of new professions.
Just cut to him, Gutenberg, being like, this is going to lead to the intelligence, it's going to rise in our society, people are going to learn more, and then just cut to us 9/11 2 years ago in Europe looking at a newspaper that was talking about how a man found the biggest crisp.
That's where it led
to. Isn't that nice?
Yeah, it's just going to fight. Yeah, it just cuts to a fucking issue of Hustler. The highest.
Yeah. Oh, that is, you can get some highbrow stuff from Hustler. People of Hustler. There's not one goddamn recipe in that magazine.
I'm not demeaning Hustler. There's some great jokes in a Hustler. But I would say Johann Gutenberg might be a little shocked by all the piss play. And very confused about the cartoon.
I think they didn't have any other choice. That was just sex.
He's the great, 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 great grandfather of Steve Gutenberg.
Of course.
You don't think that he wasn't covered in piss?
They were all covered.
But it's insane. You know, like this, like them demanding higher wages, saying we deserve more, like it created innovation. And that innovation created more, not just jobs, it created professions, it created lives, yes. Like writers, like, you know, like that anyone could be a writer, it created journalists, it created publishers, it created all, every fucking, all, so many things. It's all insane.
Right. You can just see the publicist, the writer, and the journalist all taking the guns out of their mouth right now as they listen to this. And they just say, you know what, gosh darn it. It is pretty good to be me, dang it. It is pretty good to me be. To be me.
It is good to be a publisher, well, man. Me like big old book, yep, not just for toilet book. Paper anymore. No. Book for learning page.
Hey, all you fucking screen episodes. Printers out there that are fucking that make your living screen printing. This is that's you. This is what you did.
This is
it's
you.
There.
It's yeah.
you. All right. I think my brain is officially plagued out.
Oh.
Well, my brain was not. No, I'm saying me, I'm messing. The plague was an earworm in my own brain.
I feel like the teacher of the great courses, the teacher that does the Black Death presentation for the great courses, is her, she comes from Purdue University, Dorsey Armstrong. She's an English professor. And people are now, there was an article in the WAPO where people ask her, like, or going to her for advice now, because this thing came out in 2016. Mm-hmm. And they're like, what do we do? You know all about plagues. She's like, please stop coming to me for answers.
Well, that's great. Well, I'm happy you said her full name here on the show, so she'll be left alone forever.
Go get her!
No, absolutely not.
Well, finally, there was the way that the Black Death changed medicine. Because the medical community came out of the plague with a reputation that was just as damaged as the church's. Mm. But instead of doubling down on the bullshit like the church did and continues to do, the medical profession changed. Instead of relying on pure deductive reasoning, which led to things like humorology and medical bleeding, physicians began to posit theories, test them against observable fact, and analyze the results to see if they supported those theories. And this, of course, is now known as the scientific method.
Great.
In addition to that, the concept of the hospital also evolved out of the Great Mortality. Before the plague, a hospital was simply a place to stuff sick people until they recovered, or much more likely, died. But after the plague, hospitals became a place where physicians could actually try to cure the patient, and even began separating people based on what was wrong with them, effectively creating the modern ward system.
Interesting. Mm.
So, while the Black Death certainly made the 14th century the worst time in recorded history to be alive, it could also be seen as the growing pains that essentially created modern society, even if humans are still more or less the same basic animal that we've been for millennia.
Wow. Wow. All right. There it is.
We made
the Black Death. All five parts. Absolutely fantastic.
Hey, and look at the three of us. 0% mortality rate for this podcast series.
0%. 0%. Well, that was...
Because Travis is still alive.
Everyone's still alive, and they must be. We've made that a rule. That's in the contract.
Yeah, everyone has to be alive.
Well, thank you all so much for listening to this series. That was absolutely fascinating. Great work. Learned so much. Laughed a little along the way as well.
I love
that was
this
really fantastic.
Shit. We have so much more stuff coming up this summer. We're really excited. Next week, we're going to be doing a creepy episode. Something Ooh. Weird. Something super weird.
Something weird.
We're going to go Old West. Excited to
Ooh,
go there.
Ooh, the Weird West.
Yep, we're also going to be, you're going to be afraid of the water again.
I'm kind of afraid of water already.
Yeah, you should be.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the most exciting thing of all is, just like the plague, we're going back on tour. Mamma Mia, here we go again.
Mamma Mia, here we go again. Another perfectly named tour. And Marcus, do you want to tell our audience a few of the places? And we do have some that we will be adding as well. So this is not the complete list, but it is the complete list.
Yeah,
so
if you're
just missing a few.
If your city isn't on this list, hold out hope. You might be on the next release.
Yeah, because you never know when these three beavers are going to run through town causing you to be sick with laughter.
The only thing is, there is transportation at this point. So when someone's like, you're in Des Moines, I live in Des Monc, and it's like 15 miles away. It's like, just drive. We're driving to you.
We're starting on August 12th, and we're going up until May 20th on these dates. This is a big raft. Go follow us at Instagram at LP on the left to find out exactly when we're going to be coming to your city. But here we go. St. Paul, Milwaukee, Des Moines, Omaha, Detroit, Columbus, Cincinnati, Oklahoma City, Salt Lake City, Sacramento, Oakland, Los Angeles, Charlotte, Charleston,
places
Durham,
Marcus
Charlottesville.
Places Marcus has publicly masturbated.
I gotcha.
Fucking asshole.
Norfolk, Baltimore, coming back to Baltimore. Woo. Finally. Portland, Eugene, Boise, Vancouver, Seattle, Spokane, Birmingham, Alabama, New Orleans, Austin, Dallas, Houston, Richmond, Virginia, Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, Chicago, Jacksonville, Florida, woo, Atlanta, Memphis, Boston, Mashantucket, Kentucky, Connecticut,
Connecticut,
Buffalo, Pittsburgh, Northfield, Ohio, Toronto, and finally, we're coming home to New York City.
New York City?
Quick question, though, and this is to clarify for myself and everyone who's been asking. It's Vancouver, Washington, correct?
No, it's Vancouver, but we're going to Canada.
We are going to British Columbia.
Yeah, we're going to British Columbia.
Okay, so just so everybody knows, that's Vancouver, British Columbia. Okay, yeah. Because we probably should have put that on there at some point.
And
you know,
we
whatever.
Expect to have only a 40% mortality rate throughout our
great.
Tour. That's what we're shooting for. We're hoping
that's what we're shooting for.
We're going to have two large bonfires that you can walk through. Yeah. No beavers, unless they're attached to you, ladies, wherever you are. Well, you know, you can hustle those in if you can, you know what I mean?
Well, all beavers are allowed, no matter who they be attached to, at the last podcast of the Left Live show.
Yes.
We can't wait to see everybody on the road.
And then next week, we also have a little announcement about we're working on a project with Spring Hill Jack Coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to get into it. It's going to make you shit.
It's also going to make you dance. I love that coffee. It's a great diuretic, but then after you shit, you feel so light and fluffy, and then you're also awake. Isn't that nice?
Yeah, it is
I
nice.
I love it. And again, as I mentioned, Embers, we are in Van Nuys. Embers, E-M-B-E-R-Z. That's a dispensary we're at right now, if you want to get our vapes. And Henry and I, July 24th, will be in Santa Ana, and we will be hanging out at the dispensary there.
And then next Thursday, on Shelf Friday, we're going to be in Serra Dispensary here in L.A.
Woo!
That's S-E-R-R-A. That is on West 3rd Street in L.A. So we're getting into L.A. and we're so excited.
And that'll be next, you said next Friday that'll be?
Next Friday.
All right. Well, I'm going to go check that out there as well. So I'll go hang around for 5 hours in the dispensary. They'll be so happy to see me there forever. And I'll be like, did you know they brought the Noid back? Anyway.
It's like we've heard.
Too many gas pumps work in this country. Okay, everyone. Thank you all so much for listening. Hope you're doing well out there. Hail yourselves.
Hail Satan.
Hail Geen.
Magustalations.
And just know, remember that you're going to die. Because that's how you know to live a good life.
To remember
that an end comes. So you're going to want to get it out while you can.
Unless it's devastating to you and you can't do anything because you're paralyzed with fear, then just forget about it and just it'll happen when it happens.
Yeah. That's kind of how I see it. It'll happen when it happens.
It will. For certain. Except to me. I'm invincible.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors. You can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix. Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.